You Flew Into My Heart by Yuliaris, read by Cookie Mom 6067. For as long as he can remember, Nikki has had a knack. It's the scent of a freshly crushed sprig of thyme and the sensation of a small tug, like a scarf wrapped around something in his center and patiently pulled in her direction. When he was a child and found an injured bird, the tug took him to Aunt Gianna, who taught him how to splint a wing. He nursed the bird in a cardboard box, kept carefully up and out of reach from the neighborhood cats. When his cousin cried for hours because of her lost doll, the tug took him to Stefano, the sheep farmer. One of his dogs had picked up the doll, lost in a muddy field, and brought it back with the sheep. And when Nikki started seeing things, impossible things, the tug guided him to his Nonita, who kept his secret, just as she had kept it for her beloved brother. She taught Nikki to trust his instincts, not be ashamed. He became her shadow, his father turning a blind eye, his mother urging him to go out and make friends with his classmates. His brother teased Nikki he'd never find a wife if he spent all his time with Nonna instead. Nikki nodded and kept his lips sealed shut over the words that wanted to pop out. He didn't want a wife. It was one secret he never told his Nonita. He couldn't bear the thought of her disappointment. And besides, he figured she carried enough secrets already. 4 years ago, she laid her burdens to rest, and Nikki has been drifting ever since. He moves away from his childhood home, first for university, and then for work. Nikki still misses her terribly every day. He gets a job copy editing, adds some translation proofreading, and then moves to technical writing. The water main in his office building springs a leak, and Nikki begins working remotely and then just never goes back in. He likes taking his work out into the world, packing his bag with a thermos of coffee and granola bars before taking a walk or biking in every direction to type at his laptop from parks and coffee shops and libraries. Sometimes he even holes up in shared building lobbies, blending in like any other tired office worker. Nikki feels like maybe he's searching for something, a lingering sense of unease that he can't seem to shake. So he keeps walking and looking, takes the train and subways even farther out of the city. And if he passes an antique shop, Nikki will poke his head in and wander around. It's not that he's looking for trouble, but he likes to collect things, specific things, which he finds very rarely. They give off a comforting hum on the edges of his awareness and remind him of sitting in his Nonita's room, full of carvings from her brother. It feels right having them around. Nikki's favorites include a ceramic ashtray with a turquoise glaze, a tarnished silver fork with initials OG carved at the end, and a small padlock with no key. And of course, his Nonita's rolling pin, a gift from her brother. But he keeps looking and exploring, bright punctuations amidst the dull hours of arranging dry informational words in the most logical order. His work is not exciting, but it is useful, practical. And in the evenings, he goes home and cooks. There's a local farmer-led grocery on the other end of his block, and Nikki stops by nearly every evening, picking through the bins of wax-skinned potatoes, traces of dry dirt crumbling beneath his fingers as they roll in his hands. He strolls through the herbs like he's picking flowers, inhaling as much of the heady green aroma as he can before choosing a bouquet to take home. Shallots tumble into his basket, shedding thin papery skins across the bottom and bumping into the shiny colorful shapes of bell peppers. Nikki takes them home, plugs in his laptop, and puts on his apron. He weighs the flour, half soft wheat, half durum, and mixes them with one hand while he pulls up some music on his phone. His fingers make a well in the center of the flour for the eggs. Violins soar in the melody. And by the time the brass section is joined, he's worked the dough into a smooth, elastic ball. Covering it in plastic wrap, Nikki sets it aside to rest and rinses his hands before reaching for the cutting board. There's a small snap as he tugs the tomatoes from their vines, their crisp scent clinging to his fingers. He crushes garlic beneath the flat of his knife, sticky and pungent, and the bell pepper section cleanly into colorful chunks. The olive oil gleams as it heats, sliding across the bottom of his pan, and Nicky throws a generous pinch of salt into a pot of water. He coats the kitchen counter in durum flour as the kitchen begins to fill with the scent of cooking garlic and breaks his rested dough into sections to roll out. As his fingers wrap around the handle of his Nonita's rolling pin, his heart swells, remembering all the time they spent in the kitchen together. The worn wood tingles beneath his hands. The dough is smooth and malleable, and Nicky bears down on it, keeping his presses steady, strong, and even. The thick dough thins with every pass, and Nicky pauses to dust out more flour to keep everything smooth. With a clean knife, he cuts the thin dough, eyeballing 3-centimeter-wide strips for pappardelle. The thin strands hang like ribbons from his fingers when he holds them up. Basil leaves break away from their stems easily, and then it's all stirring the tomatoes, stirring the pasta, tapping his foot as the orchestra rises to a crescendo. He scoops some of the pasta water to add to his sauce, and then pours the whole pot into the colander, steam billowing up out of the sink as the water drains away. Nicky gives the pasta a shake before adding it to the sauce, plating it with a twirl and a quick grate of Parmesan. "Shared food tastes better," his Nonita once told him. Nicky displays his finished pasta to her portrait, hung in pride of place above the counter where she can look over him. At that angle, she can't see that the wine he pours himself comes out of a box in the fridge. He just knows she wouldn't approve. He raises his glass in a toast. "Buon appetito," he tells her, and digs in, leaning up against the counter in bare feet and his flour-dusted apron. And then he does his dishes and goes to bed. In a small used bookstore by the train station, Nicky finds a book. It's old and very thin, so thin that the spine is blank, no room for anything legible. The pages are yellowed and curled, and it smells slightly musty, but he buys it anyway. It hums as he carries it in his hands. He's afraid that if he puts it in his bag, it will fall apart. It's a beautiful day, warm and sunny, so Nicky heads to a park with picnic benches, slides open his laptop, and writes a water softener instruction manual for 2 hours while the thin book sits beside him on the bench, resting on top of his bag. Nicky exhales as his document finishes uploading, flagging it as ready for review by the editing team, before finally lifting his hands from the keyboard and flexing his shoulders. The sun is warm on his skin, the sky clear and blue. Somewhere close by, a lawn has been mowed, and the fresh scent of cut grass fills his nose, though that is quickly overwhelmed by the smell of coffee as Nicky unscrews the cap of his thermos, pouring himself a still warm cup with a grateful sigh. The slim book hums, catching his attention. Nicky looks at it, curious. He hadn't actually checked to see what language it was in, intending it to simply exist in his space like the rest of his collection. He picks it up and flips it open to a random page in the middle, squinting at the tightly packed, curling letters. Handwritten, he realizes with surprise. Nicky pulls it closer to his face, hunching over it, so that his shadow falls over the words, eyes narrowing. Something about the handwriting makes it hard to focus on them, like they're squirming away. It takes all of his concentration to focus on the words, and Nicky winces, squinting stubbornly as he reads the first sentence. Something about wings in the night. A poem? Nicky is not much of a poet. He tends to gravitate towards practical words, but now that he's begun, he's determined to finish it. Nicky struggles through to read the entire paragraph, frowning fiercely as an ache begins to grow in his head, stubbornly refusing to simply set it aside. He can feel himself gritting his teeth as he reads the last line. The pressure in his head pops like an overexpanded balloon. Distantly, Nicky can feel himself falling, blacking out as his head tips forwards. Nicky blinks back awake with a start, but everything feels wrong. looks wrong is wrong. Just lifting his head is not right. Tilting sideways instead of up, and what he sees only confirms how wrong, wrong, wrong his body is. Wings. No hands, wails his mind. Flap as he flails wildly, nearly tipping over with this strange new center of gravity. His head spins, literally. And when Nicky opens his mouth to cry out, the shape of it shocks him into silence. A beak, Nicky realizes. Looking down, there are talons, half hidden beneath a fluff of feathers, striped with brown and gray. Nicky can feel the panic rising in him, like water rushing in around the edges of a hastily shut door, lifting furniture and bringing the heavy press of the ceiling that much closer. Avere fede, he hears his Nonita's voice remind him. Trust in yourself. Trust. Nicky forces himself to still, focusing inwards, looking for, there, a tug, beneath the downy feathers. Feathers, shrieks his brain, of his breast, the barest whiff of time. Nicky opens his eyes and then winces briefly before his pupils adjust to the bright light. The world looks faded, slightly blurry, and terrifyingly large. Even his laptop, shut upon the yawning expanse of the picnic table, is larger than he is. Nicky fights the vertigo as his mind scrambles to adjust to this bizarre new sense of scale. The tug, Nicky thinks doggedly. I just have to follow the tug, and whomever I find at the end of it will be able to fix this. And then he looks down and has to wobble once more, fighting a panic attack. The ground is so far away, and his legs are very short. I'm going to have to fly, Nicky realizes in despair, and is suddenly, abruptly furious. I do not accept this, he thinks viciously, and flaps his tiny wings. They feel inadequate to the task, but there is nothing else to be done. Either they will work, or they won't. Follow the tug, Nicky reminds himself, spreads his wings, and jumps. Joe is having a great day. The weather is perfect. He's got the whole weekend off, and Monday is a holiday. To celebrate, he does something he hasn't done since he was in college, packed up his easel, and gone to the park for some painting en plein air. Joe doesn't see much wildlife around his crowded city apartment. It's exciting to see the birds and squirrels at the park, so cute and lively. Joe sets his canvas up to face the small pond at the center of the park, squeezing out dabs of blue and green paint onto his palette. He's got the line between the water and the blue sky roughed out, and is about to start adding the smattering of ducks gathered along the shore when a small bird in the sky catches his eye. An owl. In the middle of the day. Swooping silently, it's flying in his direction. For a moment, Joe entertains the fantasy that this is his Disney princess moment, or that his invitation to Hogwarts has finally arrived. Neither are likely, but Joe watches avidly and holds very still as the bird gets closer and closer. It is, Joe notes, not as graceful as he first assumed. In fact, it's weaving a bit, wing beats jerky and uncoordinated. In fact, it's getting very close. Joe takes a belated step back in alarm, cut short as he nearly trips over his own bag, dumped on the ground behind him. The owl crashes right into him. Joe lets out a shriek as the small but hurtling weight slams into him, claws tearing at Joe's sweater as the tiny owl's wings beat against his chest. Pumped full of adrenaline, Joe tries to scramble away, hands lifted, torn between shoving the creature away and fear of hurting it. The tip of one talon scratches into his arm, a jolt of pain that has Joe clenching his teeth and hissing. Maybe he should be more concerned about it hurting him. Can owls get rabies? Is that even possible? Jerking his arm away, Joe manages to tear free, scrambling backwards as the small owl drops onto the ground, flaps agitatedly, and then turns to glare at him. Like this is his fault. Are you okay? Asks Joe cautiously, one hand over his thunderously beating heart. Owls can't understand people, Joe reminds himself, as the small, seriously so tiny, the creature could fit in his cupped hands, angrily fluffs up its feathers and sort of tilts, one claw scraping at the grass as it attempts to right itself. Look, you're probably confused, says Joe, because he can't help narrating things when he's nervous. It's a thing. It's day, and it's probably too bright for you. And you're maybe a baby? Are you a baby bird? The owl opens its beak and screeches at him. Not a baby, yelps Joe. My bad. I'm not a bird person. Sorry. The owl huffs in his direction and then starts looking around, head swiveling alarmingly. Joe had forgotten they could do that. Gathering itself, the small owl bunches itself up and then launches itself at Joe's easel, smacking into the canvas and tipping the whole thing over as Joe watches in horror, hands rising to fist in his hair. No, don't! The bird is now scrabbling at his canvas like it has personally offended him, talons stabbing into his upended paint palette. It's not that bad, Joe protests. I wasn't done. But the owl ignores him, intent upon savaging his canvas as Joe stares in shock. Finally, the owl hops backwards, tilting its head as if examining its work, and then hoots at Joe. Says Joe. The owl hoots again, and then, gathering up its tiny body, launches itself a short hop into the air to clumsily land on the collapsed leg of Joe's art easel. Joe inches forward until he can see the canvas. Scrawled very, very messily in paint is a word, barely legible. Cursed. Oh no, whispers Joe, eyes widening. I'm cursed? The owl screeches, eyelids shuddering into a very potent glare. Are you the curse? Guesses Joe. You do seem rather malevolent. The owl doesn't seem to like that either, flapping its wings, wobbling dangerously, and then snapping its beak at him sharply. Finally, it launches itself back into the air, Joe taking a cautious step backwards as it slams back onto the canvas. One tiny taloned foot rakes at the eerie words again and again. Oh, says Joe, eyes widening in sudden realization, you're cursed. And the tiny owl finally stills, sinking back into itself. That's it, isn't it? Says Joe. I'm sorry, that sounds upsetting and impossible and crazy, but mostly upsetting. Can I come closer? When the owl doesn't screech, Joe takes that as a yes. He slowly edges closer and then sits down cross-legged on the ground next to his vandalized canvas. Looking around the park, the only other people he can see are distant, halfway across the lake, playing volleyball or walking the path. So, says Joe, realizing that this is one conversation he's going to have to carry. At least there's no one around to judge him. You can understand me, huh? I don't suppose you know how to break the curse. The owl makes a low, grumbling sound. Well, I'm not sure what you expect me to do about it, Joe informs the owl, which apparently upsets the owl enough to hiss at him. Eep, yells Joe, jerking back. Why are you being scary? The small owl goes through a series of jerky movements, wings half raised, wobbling, beak snapping, before screaming loud and ear-splitting, and then deflating into a very pathetic-looking, very tiny owl lump. Okay, says Joe, unwincing his face. Look, I'm really sorry. You look very sad and cute, I'm sorry. And I don't know how to help you, but if there's anything... Wrong thing to say, perhaps, Joe realizes, because the owl gives itself a shake, looks him right in the eyes, and nods. Joe watches warily as it waddles closer to him, that scary little beak opening and gently, so gently, tugging at one of his fingers. And then the owl hops away, looking at Joe expectantly. When he just stares, it hops back and tugs again. You want me to follow you? Asks Joe. And then the owl appears to lose its small allocation of patience, flying up into the air, swooping down at him and snagging onto his poor abused sweater, pulling at him. "Okay," says Joe. "Let me just grab my bag. I'll come back for the easel. Calm down." The owl leads him down the path, flying ahead of him a short ways to perch on branches until he can catch up. It seems to be getting better at flying, Joe realizes, less jerky. "Well, this is weird," says Joe, as the owl finally leads him to one of the park's clearings. It lands on a picnic table, apparently abandoned. There's a thermos sitting beside a closed laptop, a small cloth-bound book with a red cover, and an opened messenger bag on the bench. "Hello?" Joe calls. "Is anyone here? Is this your stuff?" The owl flaps its wings impatiently, tiny beak pecking at the thermos, making a metal pinging sound. It hops down to the bag, hooking a talon on the bag strap and tugging before giving Joe a significant look. "I'm not stealing this stuff. Are you insane?" says Joe incredulously. "Let me see if I can find an ID." The owl huffs impatiently. "There is no ID. There is very little at all, in fact." The owl flaps its wings, head tilting to meet Joe's face. "Right. Well, I'm taking this stuff to the police." The owl's large eyes narrow, beak opening. "Don't give me that," says Joe quickly, stuffing the laptop into the bag. "You are an owl. This is an expensive laptop. I'm not going to jail for you." Reaching for the thermos, Joe pauses, then picks it up and unscrews the cap. "Oh, that smells great," he says, surprised, as the rich scent of coffee wafts out. The owl makes a small, almost pleased sound that turns into an offended warble when Joe dumps it out. "I'm trying to help," explains Joe, trying to soothe the bird's ruffled feathers. "Ha! This is a nice thermos, and I don't know how long you'll be winged. It's going to get gross." This seems to settle the grumpy thing, and Joe even washes it out in the lake before screwing the cap back on and slipping it into the side pocket clearly meant for it. The owl watches him without protest as he tucks the laptop securely into the bag, but when Joe moves to put the small book in the bag, the owl goes berserk, screeching and flying right at him, its tiny wings beating against him. "Fine," yelps Joe, trying to shield himself with his arms. "We'll keep the book. Just stop attacking me." Not sure what else to do, Joe takes the owl home with him. The small owl flies up onto a high shelf where it can glare down at him. Unsettled, Joe sets the small book on the coffee table and then goes to make a call, shoving himself as far into the corner of his squishy sofa as he can. "Quinn," Joe says, relieved when Quinn picks up. "Quinn, you have to help me." "Joe," says Quinn in her quiet, patient voice, "what's wrong?" "I've got an owl. Well, honestly, it's more like it's got me. It refuses to leave. And I think it can talk. Only it can't, but it definitely understands me." "Joe," interrupts Quinn, "do you need some company?" Joe sags. "Yes, please," he whines. "Strange," says Quinn, and then silence. They both stare at the owl still perched on Joe's tallest bookshelf, who glares right back at them. "Strange," repeats Joe. "That's it? That's all you've got?" Quinn shrugs, unbothered. "What else do you want, Joe? You have an owl, who you say claims to be cursed? I know nothing about either." "I called you because I knew you'd stay calm, but right now I think I'd appreciate just a little freaking out," admits Joe. "Andy is sorry she couldn't come," says Quinn, not batting an eye. "Perhaps you should call Niall." Joe sighs. "She's got a presentation today. I don't want to stress her out." Quinn is still locked in a staring contest with the owl. "How much do you know about what it wants?" she asked. "Not much," says Joe. "I know it came at me and seems to want to stick around. It wrote cursed on my canvas and paint, and it brought me to an abandoned bag and laptop and stuff. I gave all of it to the police except that book because it freaked out about it." "Oh, Joe," sighs Quinn, and pulls a pen and note cards out of her bag. In her looping handwriting, she writes yes, no, and complicated on different cards, laying them out like tarot cards on the table. She beckons to the owl. "Come down and let's talk." The owl blinks its large eyes at them and then in a silent swoop launches down from the bookshelf to crash into the couch cushions next to Joe. It rights itself unsteadily, ruffling all its feathers and ignoring their expressions, Joe concerned, Quinn amused, and then doing a short, flapping hop from the couch to the table. Quinn smiles. "My name is Quinn. I believe you've already met Joe." The owl blinks. "Just to confirm, can you understand us?" With a put-upon sigh, the owl grumpily waddles over to the yes card. Joe leans forward. "Are you hurt?" The owl's head spins around to face him, and then, less begrudging, it hops over to no. "Oh, good," says Joe, running a hand through his hair. "You hit me pretty hard, and with your erratic flying..." The owl puffs up angrily. "Which is way better than I would be, at flying, I'm sure," Joe quickly amends. "You want something," Quinn says to the owl. Not really a question, but the owl shifts over anyway to the other card. "Yes." "Does it need to be from Joe?" The owl pauses and then taps the card with a talon. "Yes." "Me?" says Joe, gut twisting uncomfortably. He does not like this answer at all. "But I don't know anything about..." He waves a hand. He locks eyes with the tiny owl. "Do you know what you need from me?" The owl narrows its eyes in a glare and then stomps over, as much as a small fluff of an owl can, to plop down by the complicated card. "Well," Quinn says, sitting back and looking pleased, "this is certainly interesting." Nikki is not sure what to make of the dark-haired woman that Joe invites over. She feels strange, almost the opposite of the humming his collection gives off. Just being near her is like holding your breath over a pond, the surface of the water perfectly still. She's smart, at least. Though frustrating, their stilted conversation feels like progress. They work through some other basic questions. Yes, Nikki is a person. No, there isn't anyone he needs to contact immediately. No, this hasn't happened before. He flaps over to the small red book when they ask about the curse, but it isn't until Joe flips the cover open that he suddenly panics. Because what if they read it and turn into owls too? His sudden flurry to beat Joe away leads to another round of questions. Yes, the book is related to why he's an owl. Yes, Nikki read from the book. Quinn adds a new note card that says, "Do not know." Nikki does not know if reading the book will turn them into owls as well. And then Quinn is standing up and bidding Joe a good night, kissing his cheek and making him promise to text everyone tomorrow. The exhaustion hits Nikki suddenly when Joe offers him water and some strips of raw chicken. Nikki gulps down the chicken but finds he has little interest in the water. He looks up when Joe puts something large on the table beside him. "I know it's not much, but I made you a bed," Joe says. "Or a nest? I can put it here on the bookshelf if you like." Hopping closer, Nikki can see it's a cardboard box, a hole cut out of the front, lined with soft-looking towels and what looks like a striped pillowcase. Too tired to do much else, Nikki hoots once and flutters his way inside, eyelids drooping. There's a strange vertigo shift as Joe lifts the box, the feeling of being placed somewhere high up, which feels right. Nuzzling his beak down into his feathered ruff, Nikki falls asleep. Joe is not a morning person. He likes to wake slowly, easing out of the comfort of sleep and his warm blankets. Joe jerks awake, head trying to rear back into his pillow, as the huge eyes of an impatient owl loom in front of his face. "Bwah!" Joe sputters, brain lagging, and then sputters through a mouthful of feathers as the owl whaps him right in the face. "I'm awake," Joe cries, even as he tries to curl over and bury his face into the pillow. The owl, clearly lacking anything in the realm of empathy, hops onto his shoulder and tugs on one of his curls. "No," groans Joe. But the owl bullies him awake, and that's how Joe finds himself very sleepily sipping a mug of tea as he looks up curses online. Every time he starts to nod off or get distracted, the owl starts harassing him, like some teeny tiny manager. That, or it gets up really close to the screen, blocking his view, as if certain it can read faster than he can, and maybe a demonstration will motivate Joe to do better. But it's hard to stay focused, because a lot of what Joe is finding sounds like nonsense, obviously, Because it's magic. Joe groans and presses his fingers through his hair, eyes glazing over as he scrolls through a crystal healing chart. And then the owl decides to check in, flapping right onto the keyboard and smashing some keys that jump Joe halfway down the webpage, before shoving its small head right in front of the laptop screen. "You're being very inconvenient," Joe mutters, tilting his head to see around the owl and trying to scroll back up. Slowly, dramatically, the small owl swivels its head around, its large round eyes fixed upon him in bitter reproach. "Oh, come on," complains Joe, throwing up his hands. "Just because you're having a bad day doesn't mean I also have to have a bad day. I have watched 4 awful videos by teenagers with grainy filters set to Rammstein songs. I had to make a Pinterest account." The sudden blare of his morning alarm interrupts his justified list of grievances. "This is when I was supposed to wake up," Joe informs the owl mournfully, and clumsily shambles up to go turn it off. And then, since he is regrettably awake, he decides he may as well brush his teeth. When he finally returns to his laptop, a fortifying Pop-Tart in hand, he pulls up short. His tiny owl demon, friend, appears to have dozed off, wedged between the laptop screen and the keyboard. Laughing very quietly, Joe pulls out a phone and takes a picture. 9:11 a.m. Joe: "It wasn't a dream." 9:11 a.m. Joe: "Look how cute." 9:12 a.m. Joe: "Photo attachment." And then, before he wakes his owl taskmaster, Joe flees to go take a shower. The owl is waiting for him and looking huffy when he returns, but maybe it realizes it's being kind of a bossy pants, because it takes one look at Joe in his jeans, still toweling off his hair, and freezes, eyes wide. "Have a nice nap?" Joe asks, snagging his shirt and tugging it over his head. "You want some food? Water?" In a flurry of feathers, the tiny owl launches itself off the laptop and into the kitchen. "So Wiki says owls get most of their moisture from your food," says Joe, following as he Googles on his phone. He grabs another Pop-Tart from the still-open foil packet and takes a big bite. The owl edges into his view with a glare. "Chicken is fine, right? I don't have to feed you dead mice. Please say I don't have to deal with dead mice," says Joe, shuddering. On the counter, the tiny owl's baleful glare intensifies. "I'm going to take that as a no," Joe decides, leaning away. There's something about the owl's unblinking eyes that's just... it's just a lot. Joe brushes his beard for any stray Pop-Tart crumbs. "Has anyone told you you have very expressive eyes?" Both upper eyelids drop to a flat, angry line. "Maybe I should have snooped more in your bag when I had it," Joe realizes, about the 4th time he scrolls across the concept of using a true name in incantations. The owl's head swivels around to give him a look. "Yes, okay, you were right," says Joe, throwing up his hands. He's been doing that a lot this weekend. No need to rub it in. Of course, then the owl seems to get an idea, and they spend the next 20 minutes playing some bizarre cross of scavenger hunt and charades, with the owl grabbing Joe's wallet and keys and dumping them into his shoes, flying in wobbly circles around his head, persuading him to open his front door and finally tapping in agitation at his mailbox. "You want mail?" asked Joe, completely at a loss. In reply, the owl flies back indoors to grab one of Quinn's note cards and throw it in his face. The note card says, "No." The owl lands on the mailbox again and angrily pings the metal with its beak. "Oh," Joe realizes, shoulders falling as he finally figures it out. "You want your mail." Attempting to follow an owl's directions along a bus route is exhausting. "Huh," says Joe. "I've never been in this neighborhood before. It's very out of sight, isn't it?" Joe would never have guessed that a small residential area was hidden in the middle of this industrial warehouse area. Even now, he can hear the distant beep of a truck backing up. The homes are small, single-story, and whitewashed, but there's something a little charming about them. Each one has a little garden, scraggly bushes poking out rocky earth. The owl drops down into one of the side gardens, moving straight for a rock and flipping it over purposefully. There's a house key beneath it, sunk into the soil. "Yours, I take it," says Joe, picking it up and brushing the dirt off it. The owl lands on the iron railing of the house closest to him. The curtains are all closed. Joe knocks loudly, ignoring the impatient flapping of the owl. He can practically feel it rolling its eyes at him. When no one answers, he calls out, "I'm coming in," and uses the house key. It sticks a little, and he has to jiggle it nervously before it suddenly turns and the door swings open. The owl shoots past him in a silent flurry of wings. Joe follows more cautiously, slipping his shoes off as he shuts the door behind him. There's a letter on the floor from the mail slot on the door. Joe picks it up curiously and reads the name of the recipient. "Is this you, then?" he calls after the owl. "Nikki Genova?" The home is jarringly Spartan. There's nothing on the walls, no art, no photos. When Joe slides the front closet open, there are literally only two hangers, one with a thick winter coat, the other with a rain jacket. A single box sits on the floor labeled "Canning" in spidery handwriting. "Do you actually live here?" Joe asks suspiciously. "This is very, minimalist." The bedroom is just as sparse. There's a bed with pale blue sheets and a dresser. On top of the dresser sits an ashtray with a spoon and tiny padlock inside it. Weird decorations, but at least something. "Don't your feet get cold?" Joe asks. No rugs, no slippers. In the main room, there's a small desk with a chair pulled up to it. "Not even a couch," mutters Joe forlornly. "How can someone live happily in such a sterile place?" The small owl screeches at him from the desk, tiny talons tapping at the drawer. When Joe opens the drawer, the owl immediately hops in, struggling to drag out a checkbook with his beak and heaving it onto the desk with some low, grumpy-sounding grunts. Joe resists the urge to offer to help. When the owl makes that noise, he's liable to bite. Instead, Joe watches as the tiny owl, Nikki, hops back into the drawer to dig some more, clawing out a credit card. It takes a few tries, but he manages to flip it over to the back. In a flurry of feathers, the checkbook and the credit card are rather haphazardly lined up beside one another. With one talon, Nikki taps at the card's signature and glares at Joe pointedly. Joe blinks. "What?" Nikki predictably heaves a sigh and then launches himself into flight. Clearly, Joe has been spending too much time with this strange owl, because he hardly flinches when Nikki half lands, half crashes onto his wrist, face planting into his stomach. Nikki snags the letter in Joe's hand and gives it a tug, tiny talons digging into his wrist as he struggles to right himself. "All right," murmurs Joe, and carefully shifts, tilting his wrist so Nikki can settle more comfortably before opening the letter with his fingers. It's a bill from the property manager. "You want me to pay your rent?" Nikki trills and nibbles on Joe's sleeve approvingly, and then scrambles up his arm, Joe holding it out to make an incline as owl claws snag into the loops of his sweater. Nikki settles on his shoulder, soft feathers brushing against Joe's ear. Nikki's legal name is apparently Nicolo. Nikki hoots right in his ear, nearly making Joe jump. "This is illegal," moans Joe as he forges Nikki's signature on the line of the check. It was Nikki's handwriting on the box in the closet after all, thin and long with tight loops. "This isn't why I took art classes. What am I doing?" On his shoulder, he can hear Nikki clacking his beak together. "You're laughing at me," Joe complains. "Nikki, that's very rude. I'm doing crime for you, and you're laughing at me." Joe doesn't think Nikki's sorry at all, but he does take his beak and kind of pick at some of Joe's curls, which might be affectionate. And then he flies off and brings Joe a stamp. "All done, hmm? Guess I should check to make sure you didn't leave the stove on or a window open," Joe teases Nikki, who has returned to his shoulder and makes a grumbling sound at him. Joe closes the desk drawer, sets down the pen, and walks to the back of the house. "Oh," breathes Joe as he enters the kitchen. If the rest of the house was barren, then this is an oasis in the desert. The counter is lined with jars. A vase of something green wilting in front of the window over the sink. There are cute dish towels hanging from the stove handle. Even the walls are different, painted a pale yellow, warm and bright compared to the blank white walls of the rest of the house. Plates are neatly lined up in a drying rack hanging over the sink. Very clever, Joe thinks. And when he snoops and looks in a cabinet, it's full of neatly lined goods and gleaming wine glasses. Even the pots and pans have a clearly designated spot to sit. This room feels loved. He turns to Nikki, who is perched on the counter looking up. Oh, says Joe, following Nikki's gaze. An elderly woman smiles down on them from a picture frame, wrinkled hands folded in her lap, white hair wound around her head in a braid. Your grandmother? Joe asks. Nikki flares his wings, turning away as if embarrassed. She's beautiful, Joe says. He thinks of the small photo from Nikki's driver's license. You both have the same eyes. Nikki doesn't make any sound, but he does look back up at the photo once more before returning to Joe's shoulder. Joe turns off the lights, puts the letter in the mailbox, and locks the door behind them. Nikki does not like being stuffed into a pocket, and Joe has to put all his charisma to the test to get them into the library without Nikki blowing their cover. He can feel Nikki shifting and grumbling as he hurriedly grabs some books on mythology and herbology, throws them across the self-checkout, and retreats back towards home. Nikki, unsurprisingly, bites his fingers when Joe goes to pull him back out. Come on, I'm letting you out, Joe complains. Don't be like this. Nikki does, however, allow Joe to pet him very gently on the top of his head while they ride the bus, leaning into it with his talons gripping the knee of Joe's jeans, owl eyelid drifting shut with every soft brush. Across the aisle, a teenager stares at Nikki in unabashed interest, but maintains the bus passenger code of never making eye contact or speaking a word. Their bus stop arrives, Nikki jumps onto Joe's shoulder, and they take their books home. They both fall asleep this time, warm in the afternoon sun and tired from running around. Nikki wakes first, blinking and shaking himself to full alertness, eyes darting around the unfamiliar room at its unfamiliar scale, before he remembers. This is Joe's house. The screensaver on the laptop says 4:15 p.m. It has been over 24 hours since his transformation, and Nikki is still an owl. The knowledge is a cold, hard lump in his stomach. Nikki swivels his head to look at Joe. He looks soft like this. Soft curls, soft expression, relaxed. Nikki wants to shake him and demand, "Why haven't you fixed me?" Of course, immediately following his annoyance is a twinge of guilt that cuts into the lump of fear, thin and sharp like wire. Joe took him home. Joe built him a nest. Joe upended his weekend and cut thin slices of chicken and mailed Nikki's rent check. Nikki has not been very kind to Joe. Carefully, Nikki totters to the edge of the desk and takes off on silent wings towards the kitchen and bullies a mug out onto the counter. There's water already in an electric kettle, thankfully, and it only takes four passes before Nikki manages to fly up and press the right buttons. He wrestles a tea bag out of the box and then spends an inordinate amount of time trying to tear the outer packaging off the bag. The steaming kettle goes off with a loud series of beeps. Nikki, claws tangled in the bag wrapper, tries to heave the tea bag out by the string in his beak. Ah, Nikki, says Joe's voice. He sounds sleepy and soft. Is that for me? Nikki glares at Joe. I can do this. Joe just laughs. I'm sure you've got it, he agrees, turning to pull open the freezer. Nikki finally gets the tea bag out of the wrapper and into the mug. Joe starts a microwave dinner and has begun slicing Nikki's chicken. You're being very polite, says Joe, sounding amused. Think you can keep it up? I'm inviting my friends over. See if we can break this curse of yours. Nikki scoffs, fluffing his feathers. Of course he can be polite. Joe puts the chicken on a plate and washes his hands before pouring water over the tea bag. Nikki puffs further in pride. The microwave beeps. And then Nikki learns that Joe is eating microwave spaghetti. Nikki bites Joe again. It's dark by the time his friends show up, each bearing their assigned supplies. Joe had divvied up a shopping list in their chat group for their first ritual attempt. "You sure these are all right?" asked Sandy, hefting the bag of tropical aquarium gravel. "The bag says quartz, doesn't it?" says Joe, checking his list once more. "Quartz for concentration and clarity, salt for purification, sage for healing and protection." The sound of the front door opening has them all looking up as Niall strides in. "Here," says Niall, handing Joe a thin black candle, waxy against his fingers. "I want you to appreciate how hard this was to actually find. Everything's in tins these days." "So we put the candle in the bowl of water. How do we make sure it doesn't fall over? Book, grab me a mug, will you?" They manage to get the candle into the mixing bowl, only somewhat lopsided, held up by the mug, and filled with water, so only about an inch of candle is not submerged. They gather around the coffee table. "Once we begin, nobody laugh," Joe reminds them sternly. "Nikki, can you come down into the circle?" In a silent whoosh, the small owl swoops down onto the table, landing only slightly off center, surrounded by a ring of aquarium gravel and salt. Then the owl wobbles and fates plants onto the table. There's a pregnant pause, and then Booker wheezes and stands. "I can't," he says, more smothered giggles, making his whole face contort. "I'll be outside. Just let me know when you're done." "Me too," says Andy, rising, though it's unclear if she's opting out of the ritual or just opting into bullying Booker for one of the cigarettes they all know he has hidden in his pocket. They both promise to quit by the end of the year. Quinn frowns, shooting Andy a look, but lets them both go without further comment. On the table, Nikki has managed to right himself and is shaking loose table salt out of his feathers in jerky, snappy movements. Joe almost opens his mouth to say something, but as if he can sense it, Nikki's head twists to shoot him a baleful glare. Joe snaps his mouth shut. "Do we light the sage first or the candle?" asks Niall, cracking open the plastic produce container the herb is packaged in. "Is it even going to burn? Maybe we should have gotten some from the spice section." "The Wiccan sites I've read say that intent is more important than specific ingredients," says Joe, trying to sound confident. "The sage doesn't have a place in the incantation, so we may as well start with it," decides Quinn, lighter flicking in her hand. "Ah," Joe thinks in amusement, recognizing it. "That's why she let Booker and Andy go out for a smoke. She stole the lighter first." The fresh sage does surprisingly burn without issue, and Quinn waves it around the room. It's unexpectedly strong, earthy, and sharp, and it makes Joe sneeze once before they put it out. "Earth, fire, water, and air," Joe recites, sprinkling salt into the water in a counterclockwise motion around the candle. "Be the answer to our prayer. Banish this curse and leave us pure. Tonight we claim a blessed cure." And then he lights the candle and sits back to take Niall and Quinn's hands. In the center of the salt and quartz circle, Nikki holds very still, wide owl eyes unblinking. "Please heed our request. Let the individual known as Nikki, born to the name Niccolo Genova, be returned to his true form," Joe adds. "Maybe Nikki's true name and legal name are the same?" Didn't hurt to throw it in there. And then Joe's out of stuff to say, and it's time to wait for the candle to go out on its own. It's a little awkward, so Joe repeats a mantra, break the curse, in his head to stay focused. Wax slowly drips down from the tilted candle and clumps where it hits the water. Niall shifts her leg. Joe's nose itches. "Break the curse," thinks Joe, and watches another slow drip of candle wax roll downwards. He should have raised the water level higher. Finally, the wick burns low enough that it sputters out in the water. Exhaling heavily, Joe lets go of Niall and Quinn's hands, flexing his stiff fingers before he pulls the candle out and snaps it in two. "Time to go outside," he announces, and offers his arm to Nikki, who clambers up his sleeve to grip his shoulder. Niall hauls the bowl of salt water, slashing with them. Lit in the ambient yellow light of the street lamps, Booker and Andy scowl at them as they push open the door and into the night. Quinn tosses over the lighter with a smirk. "Where do you want to bury it?" asks Niall, waving their brand new garden trowel, product tag still looped around the handle. They end up digging a hole by the neighbor's fence, push the cracked dirt on top of it, and pour the salt water in counterclockwise circles around it. "So," says Booker, unimpressed, "that's it." On his shoulder, Nicky shifts, soft feathers pressing against Joe's cheek. They stare at the damp dirt, and Joe belatedly realizes the salt is probably going to kill the plants around it. It's mostly just weeds, but he still feels kind of bad. Niall tries to stifle a yawn. Nothing else happens. "We'll just have to wait and see," says Joe glumly, and they troop back inside to clean up. The next day, everyone agrees to come over and hang out again because Joe has the best friends ever. 11:40 a.m., Quinn, "We'll join afternoon meeting." 11:42 a.m., Quinn, "Andy at gym." 11:43 a.m., Niall, "Packing up my textbooks to study at Joe's." 11:45 a.m., Booker, "Picking up beer." 11:45 a.m., Booker, "Joe, you owe us pizza." 12:04 p.m., Andy, "Fuck yeah, carbs." The pizza arrives just in time for Quinn and Andy to roll up in Quinn's gleaming Subaru Forester, Quinn looking intimidating and untouchable in her pale blue pants suit, and Andy practically hanging out the window of the car trying to air out her sweaty gym tank. "Business meeting go well?" asks Joe, handing Quinn a glass of wine. "Europeans," she says, curling her lip, which Joe assumes means, "Yes, I devoured their young, and they thanked me for it." He's really glad he's not a part of her corporate stratosphere. "I'm going to read about blood sacrifices," Andy announces, digging into a greasy slice of Meat Lover Supreme. "Not near my textbook," says Niall, kicking her away from the coffee table. "I got to sell this thing back for a fraction of the cost at the end of the semester." Even Nicky can't resist, dropping down onto the counter in a flutter of wings, craning his small head at the triangle slices of pizza skeptically. He snags a piece of pepperoni, dragging it across the table and nibbling around its edges in little beak bites. And then, bolstered by cheesy goodness, the team starts to get creative. Niall brings out her cross. They burn more of the sage. They try breaking a mirror while Nicky is reflected in it. Andy is much too excited to wield the hammer that crushes a small makeup case containing said mirror. Even Booker breaks out some French, muttering and waving his hands around Nicky. Andy is even allowed, under very strict supervision, to prick her finger with a sterilized needle to draw some blood. Nicky flies away and refuses to come down until there is a Band-Aid. Joe doesn't want to give up all hope, but... "Maybe we're just not very good witches," he sighs. "I'm sorry, Nicky." "Yeah," agrees Andy. "If I was a witch, I'd be bad. Just a total badass bitch." "Hmm," says Quinn, as she continues to very neatly dissect a whole roast chicken, lining the bones up neatly on the plate beside her. Later, they're not really sure what to do with them, but they once more try to get creative. They make a pentagram and use a leg bone to stir more salt water, which they flick over Nikki's wings. Nikki does not like that. They bake a bone and look at the cracks, attempt to grate some into a powder and then throw it away. They even circle back to the red book, though Nicky makes Quinn hold it open while he clumsily flips through it, wings half spread, to prevent anyone from reading the pages. He abandons it pretty quickly to sulk on Joe's shoulder and demand head scratches, so no leads there. As evening creeps in, Booker swaps to grilling Niall with flashcards, and everyone else falls back to their own devices. Joe back to reading his library books with Nicky on his shoulder, Andy continuing her wiki rabbit hole on animal sacrifice, and Quinn taking a moment to do the daily New York Times Wordle challenge. "I don't know how Joe is so patient," says Booker. "I wouldn't be able to stand all that harassment." I don't know, says Niall, watching Joe over her cup of tea, tiny claws clinging to Joe's shoulder, the small Alice systematically tugging on wayward curls while Joe complains. I feel like... She trails off thoughtfully. Joe flips the page on the book in front of him and then squawks as the owl nips his ear. Even as Joe jumps, he makes sure to keep his shoulder level, one hand half rising as if to catch something tumbling off. And the owl, with his many nips, hardly leaves a mark on the delicate shell of Joe's ear. What? Asks Booker. Hmm, she says, noncommittal, smiling into her cup. All right, kids, says Niall. Andy snorts a laugh. It's been fun, but I'm out of here. Of course, this sets off a flurry of goodbyes, and Joe is careful not to jostle Nikki as he gives everyone one-armed hugs goodbye. Dinner time, Joe announces, opting to ignore the pizza boxes for now. Joe yawns as he chops up some more chicken for Nikki, and who knew that something so cute could look so terrifying horking down raw chunks of meat, and microwaves a cup of instant mac and cheese for dinner. Nikki seems smaller than ever, uncharacteristically quiet and withdrawn, his wings tucked tight at his sides. We'll try again tomorrow, Joe tries to assure him. Nikki does not respond. Joe almost misses the hissing. Nikki swoops into Joe's bedroom on silent wings, eyes wide in the perfect darkness of night. The night is good. Joe is good. Nikki is good. Because there is a dead weight, dangling, clenched between his beak. Nikki is providing. Nikki lands on the bed with a thump and hoots, waking Joe. Oh no, cries Joe, cringing back from the small mouse that Nikki has dropped onto the pillow beside his face. Nikki ruffles his feathers, offended. Does Joe not think the mouse is fat enough? As if Joe has any place to judge. He eats things out of a microwave. He clearly needs Nikki's assistance to be properly fed. And then Nikki realizes what he's done. He killed a mouse. The night no longer feels good. Nikki flexes his talons into the bedding, remembering the rush of the snap and satisfaction. It was all instinct. He had to. It was the only thing to do. He hadn't even been Nikki, just an owl who needed to provide. Oh, God! He was forgetting who he was. The panic claws at him from the inside out. Niccolo? Niccolo! Nikki blinks, surprised, his warm hands cup around him. Joe's face swims into focus in front of him, looking worried and scared. Can you hear me? Are you okay? Nikki feels wobbly and weak, but he can't bear to have Joe look so worried. Joe, who he needs to make sure is fed, only... No, that's not right. Or is it? Nikki shakes his head a little and then bumps it against Joe's fingers. Oh, geez, you had me worried, says Joe, and starts to stroke gently. Nikki, confused and scared, leans into the comfort. Joe is good. Joe is kind. Is this about the mouse? The reminder sends another frisson of fear through Nikki. Oh, shit, you're shaking again, swears Joe, and bundles Nikki closer, as if that might help. Hey, it's okay. Niccolo, whatever it is, I'm sorry. I promise I'm going to do my best to take care of you, okay? Nikki makes a soft, hurt sound. He knows Joe will, but... Joe lifts Nikki up to eye level. Hey, he says gently, listen to me. I promise. And Nikki, who is weak, believes him. He leans forward to bump his beak against Joe's nose, which makes Joe smile. And then Joe leans forwards and drops a kiss right on top of Nikki's feathery head. There's a loud pop, and then Nikki is suddenly a man. Limbs, hands, clothes. Thank the Lord for small mercies, knocking Joe onto the floor with his sudden weight. Says Joe wide-eyed. Holy shit, are you a model? Heart racing, Nikki looks down at the kindest, most beautiful man he's ever met. I have to kiss him, Nikki thinks wildly. I have to kiss him back. He needs to know. And Joe's eyes widen further as they lock gazes, and Nikki leans forwards and passes out. Nikki wakes to the smell of coffee. He blinks for a moment, confused. He's not in his box. He's in a bed. Not his bed, but a bed. Thick blankets tucked under his arms and a soft pillow cushioning his head. Confused, Nicky sits up and then clutches his head as everything rushes back. The book. His transformation. Joe. Looking out the window, light is just emerging, pale gold and slanted against the window. Sunrise. He pushes back the covers, still wearing his clothes from Friday, and wanders out of the room. Joe's bedroom. Nicky realizes, and then blushes. Joe's bed. Joe, who kissed him on the top of his head, and who Nicky very much wanted to kiss back. Joe, who only knows you as an owl, Nicky reminds himself sternly. Joe, who asked you if you were a model, whispers a voice in the back of his head, a hopeful one. A more practical one drowns that one out, noting that if Nicky passed out on Sunday, that meant today was Monday and he needed to be at work in a few hours. Joe, he thinks instead, and sets his feet on the ground tentatively. Pushing himself to standing is strange, both wobbly and right, like remembering how to ride a bike. With every step, he feels more confident, though he keeps his hands outstretched until he gets to the doorway. Not that they'd do much good catching his balance, he realizes. Not like his wings had. Nicky finds Joe in the kitchen, gazing out the window and looking sleepy. There's a mug in his hands, forgotten and full to the brim. If Nicky were still an owl, he'd fly onto his shoulder and sort out some of his wayward curls. Nicky looks away as his fingers twitch, examining the kitchen with new eyes. It's even less impressive to his human eyes, and Nicky shoots the microwave a quick glare before Joe notices him, startling slightly. Nicky, he says, eyes widening before flying down to make sure he didn't spill. Nicky swallows. Joe looks very handsome in the morning sunshine. Can I kiss you? Nicky thinks. You kissed me. I think it's only fair. What day is it? Nicky asks instead. Oh, right. Monday. It's Monday, says Joe. But it's a national holiday. Oh, says Nicky. He had forgotten. And then, like a literal angel, Joe hands his mug. Coffee? Please, breathes Nicky, reaching out with hands, to grasp at it thankfully. He inhales the familiar aroma deeply, not caring that it isn't his usual roast. Nothing about the last few days has been usual. It's been scary and chaotic and loud, but also there were people teasing each other and working together. Nicky had felt supported, not so alone. Nicky gives his head a little shake. Right now, he's just going to drink this liquid gift from the gods and not worry about anything else. Niall knocks twice before pushing Joe's door open, only to pull up short. There's a stranger sitting at Joe's breakfast table, broad shoulders hunched over a steaming mug, the scent of fresh coffee heavy in the air. And then the man looks up, pale, eerie eyes narrowing as they meet hers. Oh my God, Niall blurts, hit with a sudden certainty. You're the owl! The stranger's eyes narrow, mouth opening to say something, but then Joe bursts in, beaming. Niall, he cries, and swoops her into a hug. Over his shoulder, Niall sees the stranger sit back, pressing his lips back together firmly. You'll never believe this, says Joe, but we broke the curse. He spins her around to face the stranger. This is Nicky. He's back to being a human. Niall gives an awkward little wave. Hi, and congrats. Thank you, says the man, Nicky, gravely. And then quite suddenly, he looks over her shoulder at Joe and smiles, and it transforms his face utterly into something beautiful. I can hardly believe it. I am so happy to have coffee in my hands again. You better be happy, says Joe. I got you the fancy stuff. Hey, says Booker, only a few steps behind Niall. Got your text. What? Who is this? Booker, cries Joe. And Niall is released, so they can embrace. It's Nicky. He was the owl. First coffee of the weekend? Booker asks. face sympathetic as he takes in Nikki's hands, cradled around the mug. "It has been a rough time," says Nikki, as if he's admitting something vaguely shameful. Then Niall remembers how many times they all watched him bite Joe, so yeah, that's probably kind of embarrassing. "I also brought over that shop vac you wanted to borrow for your basement," says Booker, "if you have a moment to help me get it out of my car." "Yes," says Joe immediately, then looks back questioningly. "Niall, Nikki, we'll be right back." Nikki nods, making no move to part from his coffee, and Niall just grins and gives him a thumbs up. She can take a few minutes alone with the mysterious owl man. The moment Joe and Booker disappear, he turns to her. "How did you know?" Nikki asks quietly. "Huh?" "That I was the owl. You knew immediately." "Oh, well," hedges Niall. To be honest, she's not sure. Like a puzzle piece slotting into place. But the more she thinks about it, the more logical it becomes. "I don't know, but like, your eyes are kind of similar. And I mean, Joe insisted you were a person, and now here you are, a person." "Hmm," says Nikki. His eyes on her are intense, and she wonders if they've always been like that, or if this is a lingering side effect from being an owl with a thousand-yard stare. "If you ever feel or see strange things," Nikki says, "you can talk to me. I will try to help." Oh, right, says Niall, feeling simultaneously concerned and flattered. "Thanks." They both jump, as there is a loud slam outside. "Jesus," swears Booker. "Andy," cries Joe, delighted, and probably going in for more hugs, utterly unfazed by Andy's habit of kicking indoors. The garage one this time. "And Quinn, hello." They all gather in Joe's living room. It's more crowded now, with Nikki's broad shoulders taking up space on the couch. He hunches over, elbows on his knees, frowning at the thin red book on the coffee table before him. "It is dangerous," says Nikki. "I do not want to keep it, but I also cannot put it out into the world for someone else to stumble upon like I did." Quinn tilts her head at it. "You said items like this and the book, they hum?" "Yes, though it's quiet in your hands. When I read it the first time, it built a pressure in my head. Maybe it was because I was already cursed, but when you held it, the words were just gibberish. I couldn't read anything." Joe shifts, making an apologetic face. "Quinn, I hate to ask, but would you be willing to watch over it? I understand if not, but if Nikki's theory is correct and your presence dampens his powers, then it's the safest place I can think of." "I suppose," Quinn says, frowning. "It's such a small thing," says Andy, grabbing the book and flipping it open. "Andy," cries Joe as Nikki leaps up, "don't read it." "Eh," says Andy, leaning away from them and squinting at the pages. "This is gibberish. Niall, you want to look?" "No," says Nikki, so emphatically that both women look at him in surprise. "Not Niall." "I will take care of it," says Quinn, holding out her hand. With a sigh, Andy plops it into her palm. Standing, in one smooth motion, Quinn strides out of the room, book in one hand, glass of wine still cradled in her other. The sound of the front door swinging open and then closed echoes back to them. "Should we follow her?" asks Nikki, unsure. "Nah," says Andy, flopping down into Quinn's abandoned seat. "She had the look," agrees Booker. "She'll be back on her own time." "Well," says Niall awkwardly, "what now?" Joe looks at Nikki. Nikki looks at Joe. There's a long moment of silence. "I thank you for your help," says Nikki stiffly. Joe looks away, waving a hand. "No problem. Glad it all got sorted out, you know." The silence returns. "Merde," says Booker. And everyone jumps as he stands abruptly and stabs a finger at Nikki. "We're watching football on Sunday at 4 o'clock. Joe's hosting. I expect to see you here." He spins to face Joe, hands on his hips. "Nikki needs to go down to the police station to get his stuff. You should drive him there." He shakes his head, everyone staring at him with different expressions. Joe and Nikki both look shocked. Naya looks surprised but pleased. And Andy just looks proud. Now you can both stop being ridiculous. Jesus. And then the front door swings open again. Quinn, says Nikki, straightening, as she walks back into the room. One hand holds her wine glass, now drained. The other. Where's the book? Asks Joe warily. Quinn smirks and tosses a lighter to Andy, who catches it one-handed. There are gray, ashy smudges on her fingers as she holds her wine glass out for a refill. I said I'd take care of it, she says simply. Are Joe and Nikki officially dating yet? Still working on it, drawls Andy, as Joe makes a strangled sound and Nikki blushes pink. 1 year later. Happy anniversary, Owl Man, cries Joe, flinging his arms wide as he walks in the kitchen to better show off his I'm Owl Yours t-shirt. Nikki looks up at him from the table, coffee cup half raised. The morning sunlight paints his bedhead in gold, and Onita's photo smiles down on the jumble of their combined kitchens. Nikki blinks slowly. We didn't start dating until the 3rd. True, but today's the day you flew into my life. Joe bats his eyelashes as Nikki rolls his eyes. And look, to celebrate, I got us tickets to the Ornithology Rehabilitation Center. Nikki, no, wait. Ya Amar, come back. The end.